Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
Now's my shit together, is my shit together.
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Hello and welcome back to Dyson Jacks. I'm Tom Howell, Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 22. NASDAQ Futures down 133 as we're at the PCE number today, but that was a number that, since nobody has any detail and nobody knows where it come from, it's kind of a tough sort of thing, but there you go. We have Professor Kevin.
Good morning.
How are you?
Oh, I'm doing all right. What's up?
Well, the market's not up this morning, but it has been up. We have all kinds of things up. We got the Irish up. We got Texas and Ohio State up. We've got stuff up. We got the Cubs that can't. If they go and lose to Colorado, that would even be a bigger blow, wouldn't it?
That would call into question their ability to even make the playoffs.
I would say so. I mean, I think that that's kind of where they're at. everybody seems to be getting hurt. This pitcher came back, pitched a couple games. Now he's out again, right? Talon, what his name is?
Tyone?
Yeah. Which is worse, a left groin strain or a right groin strain? They were quick to say it was a left groin strain. What do you suppose the difference there is?
Well, I would imagine push off of one leg or the other. So, you know, he's a right-handed pitcher, so his push-off leg is the right leg. I would imagine you don't feel very good landing on the left leg, but if it's strained on that side, but at least you probably can pitch sooner if it's on the if it's not on your push leg.
Yeah, you know, I'm sitting there trying to figure out which is usually they just say a groin strain. They don't go into this kind of detail, Kevin. You know, it's interesting. God, what an odd world we live in, eh? What do you think the idea? And we'll have to do it probably somewhere at the end of the year. Is there some place you think we're going to be able to get all the different budgets for all these colleges and see what they all are? In terms of, do you really want Ohio State playing Purdue? What do you suppose the difference in NIL and budget is there? 10-1?
Yeah, there actually is. It's not necessarily, you know, it's not totally accurate, but it'll give you a pretty good idea. There is a reporting website for Title IX, and all the athletic departments have to go in and report their expenses into this website, because it demonstrates that they're spending proportional amounts on women's sports compared to men's sports. So, yeah, the budgets for all of that stuff are in there. Now, the question gets to be, how much stuff is there off book that has influence on the on certain athletic programs? So that's not it's not a perfect measure, but it gives you a pretty good idea. It has all the coaches' salaries. But coaches' salaries are a good example, because there are a lot of earnings opportunities for coaches that are built into their contracts, but they are not salary per se. You know, coaches' shows, things like that. So, you know, it's not, like I said, it's not a perfect measure, but it gives you a pretty good idea. Where news media goes off the rails on this stuff is that there's also a revenue side of it on the report, and the revenue is FYI data. So the colleges don't necessarily take it seriously when they report it. Some do. But then when you might see some report about what programs have the most revenue and so on. And then if you go look at the source, you find out that it was from this Title IX reporting tool, which is not not in any way accurate. Just to give you an example, I looked at it one year. This was back when Notre Dame was in the Big East, so I was looking at the Big East schools, and more than half of them had their revenue equal to the dollar to their expenses. Now, the probability of any one having it to the dollar is small, but all that tells you is someone was throwing in a plug number just to fill out the report. So you were required by law to report accurately on the expense side, but it didn't matter on the revenue side.
Well, that's sort of interesting in itself. Half the document has to be accurate, not the other half. I just wonder what the interplay is.
The other half was just out of they were like asking out of curiosity.
I just wonder when this is all, when all is said and done, right? The idea of what a college, thinks of, let's say, for instance, Ohio State. People pour a lot of money into Ohio State. I don't quite know why, but I don't know why they do it with Notre Dame either, to tell you the truth. But there's people paying high school kids now all over the place, it appears. Well, if somebody is paying a high school kid and they steer him toward Ohio State, and he's been getting paid there from day one, say it's Adidas, say it's Nike. The question is, where is that accounted for? Because it obviously helps the school tremendously. I mean, I would say that, and the school is part of, the deal, I think. As much as you and I might like her, Hannah Hidalgo says tomorrow she's going to Montana State, I don't think the Red Bull thing follows her, does it? Or does it? I mean, I would doubt it. So there's kind of an interplay here between...
Well, in that case, it might. If it's her own independently struck deal.
Yeah, but she wouldn't have got it if she wasn't a guard at Notre Dame. I mean, come on.
Well, she wouldn't have gotten it if she wasn't a great player, too.
Right. Well, I understand.
So she's a great player at a reasonably high profile program, but was Iowa a major high profile program before Caitlin Clark got there?
Well, she did all the stuff before she got her. I don't know. It was still a Big Ten school.
Caitlin Clark had transferred for her final year someplace else. Do you think her deal would have followed her? Olivia Miles is going to SMU.
Well, it depends if the
one of those is. Do you think her deals are following her?
If she went to a school that was never on TV, no.
It's an interesting hypothetical, Tom, but that's all it is. So.
Well, I'm just saying the interplay between the sponsorships and the schools and the payment is clearly there. Is my only point. I mean, I don't think the who was it that gave the Notre Dame pay for play quarterback 2 years ago all that money? I don't think they would have paid him the money if he said at the last second, "I'm going to Eastern Illinois."
No, but on the other hand, he wouldn't have gone to Eastern Illinois at the last second. So,
well, I'm saying it's almost the school's paying the people is what I'm saying. It's an interesting economic interplay. It would be a huge problem if you were in grad school to try and define where all this money's coming and going and how they determine who's worth what.
Oh, yeah, and everything is working around the whole notion that they're employees of the universities, which they really are. But, most of this stuff, a lot of the endorsement stuff, some of it's totally independent, and they have their marketing agents and so on that arrange for it. But by and large, most of the revenue that's flowing through to the players is really trying to set up an arm's length arrangement for employment, and they are de facto employees of the university. I've been saying this for a long time. Sooner or later, somebody's going to challenge that. Somebody's going to be looking for a comp claim for an injury or something like that, and they're going to sue the university to get it. And it's not a very defensible position to say they're not employees.
I would agree.
I do believe that's part of why they changed the formula so that the schools could pay stipends directly to them instead of trying to get rid of the these collectives, because the collectives were clearly, just a scam to demonstrate that they really weren't employees of the university when in fact they were. I don't think that could have ever passed muster.
Well, the lesson here that I'm A, trying to educate on, and B, trying to search for, is I read a, God, I wish I still had it, Kevin. I read a piece. Don't assume, I guess, is my message here to everybody. Don't assume that behind all this crap, when I say crap, all the payment and this person paying it, that on a business level, somebody isn't doing hard numbers to see somehow if it's worth it for them. And the example I give is 1 year, God, Kevin, how long ago would this have been? Roger Clemens was essentially, he was in his last year somewhere or whatever, and it comes to the trading deadline, and he didn't have a, I think it was Clemens, and he didn't have a contract for the next year. So he's on the block, right? So the question is, his team was selling in today's parlance, or wherever they were. And the person who wrote the article listed about five teams maybe in the AF American League, because for some reason those were teams that won. It was the Yankees, it was Boston, it was Baltimore, it was somebody else. And the guy went down every single team. He said, this is how people really, other than the fans, who are a bunch of idiots and just want to spend everybody's money, hey, why don't the Cubs sign this guy for $50 million? You know, that kind of crap. They basically went down the thing and said, okay, for Boston, I think I got this right, he was going to get five starts. He would be the fifth starter. And they said, well, Boston's fifth starter is actually pretty good. So he's probably going to be 3-2 or 2-3. So even if it was the old Roger Clemens, which he wasn't, but he was older Roger Clemens, he really, you can't expect him to go 4-1. So he's maybe worth a game to you. And he, and the number was, he was making like 10 or something, and it was going to be the last 4 months, so it would be like 4 or 5. That doesn't do crap for you. Now, why, by the way, the Yankees, their fifth starter is a bag of balls. He's 0-5, 1-4. So Clemens might get you 2 games there, and there was some number he put on a game because it got you that much closer to the wild card, which got you a, not necessarily a home date, but it did something. The wild card was worth X. So if it was 3 games or 2 games, maybe you got in wild card 0 or 1, you're just pissing your money away, basically. So I don't think that mentality is only restricted to the Roger Clemens situation. I mean, I think somebody somewhere at Under Armour or whoever it happens to be says if they get this guy for Notre Dame or Sidewash State or wherever the hell it is, and they pay him $1 million, somehow it's worth $1 million to Under Armour. Whether it's in, they must have some kind of a deal where if the Irish, now they fill up mostly all the time, but somehow or another if the Irish go to the playoffs, it's worth $2 million in Under Armour sales in the bookstore or online or whatever. I mean, there has to be these calculations going on when money's coming from other people, and you just wonder how it all ties together. I mean, it's an amazing problem, isn't it? Or interest of mine, I guess.
Well, yeah, so just to back up the train a little bit, your Clemens example is interesting. You know what that really is it's the it's taking the wins above replacement stat, and instead of applying it generically, you've taken it and you've applied it specifically to different different team scenarios.
Well, yeah.
That was kind of an interesting approach to it. So we have that. But the other thing that it would be a factor in signing somebody like Clemens is what would be your expectation for him in the playoffs, assuming you make the playoffs. So, you know, some guys are very playoff experienced and might give you a playoff starter that you really need. So we can debate, you know, back and forth on that. But I think there's a lot of factors that go into.
Well, also if you boot the other guy, he might be now your best bullpen guy. And yeah, it's more detailed. But
yeah, so it might cascade through a lot of things. And I'm sure they have statistical models now. They may not have back when Clemens was pitching, but everybody's got statistical models for that stuff. That was what Billy Beane got them going.
I know, you statistics dudes, you and I would sit there and say, should we get this guy? And the first thing you or I are going to say to the other guy is he better than the guy we got? Right?
Well, yeah. And when it comes to a lot of the statistical models, it's like card counting. Doesn't mean you're going to win the next hand. It just means you're going to win more than your share.
Well, when you're card counting blackjack, you're trying to find out the likelihood of you getting a blackjack. So the more tens and aces there are on the deck, there's more. Now the question is, you may not get the blackjack, the dealer might. But why is it an advantage to you? If you get it, you get paid 1.5 to 1, he doesn't. Right?
Yeah.
So, but it is very frustrating
either way, you don't know who's going to win, but over the long haul, you can do that. And so, generally, that approach, the statistics, really apply very much so to a 162-game season, because that's a pretty good-sized sample, and that works. But it's not going to get you through a 3, 5, or 7-game playoff series, because that kind of small sample is not necessarily going to translate, because now you have luck factors and hot hand factors and things like that that come into play.
But you also, I think, in the statistics, which I am totally, I'm never going to say I'm against them, because they're obviously a tool, but I'm against people using them the wrong way that have never use the term have never played anything in their life. I mean, that's a little harsh, I know. You can have, I think the issue with the Cubs this year, for one, is when everybody was hitting, everybody looked good, and all of a sudden a couple guys go into a slump, and a few guys maybe are hurt, and all of a sudden everybody's not hitting, and guys are getting pitched around, swinging at bad balls, doing a lot of crap. I mean, you can look at all these statistics.
That's the hitting side of it. The other side of it, too, was that you had all of these journeyman bullpen pitchers pitching out of their minds, and they were going to come back to earth sooner or later.
Well, but I mean, when you look at baseball, and you look at the stats, and you go, well, this guy's worth X because of the stats. I can only name, you know, I don't remember the names that much, Kevin, but I can't name that many people where no matter what team you put them on, would be a standout in terms of they're going to hit 300, they're going to hit 40 home runs. Doesn't matter where you put them or who's in front of them or behind them. I'm going to say in our lifetime, there might have been 10 of those guys. Ernie Banks, Guerrero, people like that. You can put them on the most horse bleep team, and they're going to be noticed. I don't know that you take even a tremendous ball player like Joe Morgan, put him on some hapless team during his career without Lee May hitting after him and somebody else hitting before him. I don't think he does what he did. I mean, how could you? I mean, there's only a few people ever that were that good that no matter what you did to them, they could hit the ball. Stan Musial, because he was on some pretty good teams. There's some guys, but there aren't very many, are there?
Yeah, there aren't very many. I probably way more than 10 in our lifetime, but nevertheless, I think it's a solid point, yeah.
And I think everybody kind of knows where these sort of dudes are, but it's funny how the money's playing out on this. I mean, the guys were telling me last night that they got on their phone how much money this guy Parsons is going to get paid for Green Bay. And poor Jerry Jones lost him. What's the guy going to make? $120 million guaranteed or some number? Did you read that?
Yeah, he better make a big difference.
Yeah, I mean, how much, you know, how much is that? I mean, when you... Now, if he's that good, he makes everybody else on the line better. How many wins do you think he's worth? I have the Packers. I went through the power rankings yesterday, and I can't name them all, but, you know, the Bears have a tough slog because they're like 20th. I think they have the Detroit is 4. Green Bay is, I think, in the top 10. And then Minnesota's like 12 or 14 or something. So they're all ahead of the Bears. The Bears could easily lose every one of those games. They probably won't, but they could. Now, is it?
Who was the defensive end the Bears got a few years ago? They traded a lot for him.
Oh, Sweat.
No, before Sweat.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. I forget his name, but he didn't do Sweat.
Well, no, he did do squat. He was outstanding for a year or two, and then he got some injuries. And I think he's still knocking around the league.
Yeah, he is. I forget his name. He was pretty good for a bit. But, you know, one of those guys can turn you around. But there's so much, boy, 17 games, Kevin. It's pretty hard to keep your team together, isn't it? What's the...
The NFL is a war of attrition as much as anything else. So, how do you stay healthy playing that game? Sooner or later, it's going to bite you. There are very few players who go through without serious injury.
Well, and they're talking an 18th game now.
Yeah, it's because they care about safety.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty weird stuff.
The line out of North Dallas Cowboy, or North Dallas 40, we're just part of the equipment.
Well, I think most people thought that way. John's brother Pete, who played 5 years, he says you're just you're no different than a helmet to those guys. Now it's kind of unfortunate. I'm just curious as to how all the numbers play out, Kevin. As you know, one of the themes of the show is, well, whoever you look at, you know, you can look at the economy, you can look at, you know, administration policy, old administration policy, and you look at what people's view of the world going forward for them is. And I see a lot of younger people not necessarily with the best view going forward in terms of this generation versus last. You know, will they own a new car ever? Will they be able to buy a house ever? You see all those kinds of things, and you see people, what I'm seeing, not struggling, they're out having a beer, it's not like they're homeless, they're not. You wonder, and then you see the view that the Packers obviously must have of the world the next 5 years, that everybody's going to have nothing but money to gamble with. They're all going to show up to the game, the ratings on TV are going to continue to go. It is, you wonder how all these different, I'll say varying views of the next 10 years, which one's right, where the clash is going to be. I mean, it's just, it's pretty bizarre, isn't it, when you think about it. I mean, we had a position in this snow, SNOW, and the thing was up like $40-some yesterday on earnings. The stock's, well, it's down a little bit today, but it's trading, say, 240. I think their revenue per share, Kevin's like $12. So that's 20 times. It's up there, man. You know, I never give that kind of recommendations because who knows, it might be going to go to 400. But it's people's view of what these companies are going to do is a hell of a lot different than a lot of people you and I talk to and what their view is. Some of the people you teach, they're in taking classes trying to get from $20 an hour to 25, you know, or 28 or something, which is great for them and great for you. But it's not the same as 20 times revenue, is it?
No, it's not. And, one of the things that I always enjoyed when Dan Janitas was on was that Dan was very focused on evaluating management teams and looking at them, you know, how stable are they, how talented are they, how clear is their vision, and of where they're trying to go and so on. Because that's really when you're trying to figure out where a company is supposed to go, is going to be at any point in the future, isn't it really driven by that? Much more so than saying they have a great product, is it going to get to market? There's a lot of people with great products who have never succeeded as a company, so I just think ultimately that's what you should be evaluating is. How stable, you know, is first of all, is that management team going to continue to stay in place for the long haul? And then if so, does it have the right vision? Does it have the right skill set? Does it have the ability? The Gartner Group does a lot of evaluation of software, and they have their magic quadrant evaluation. And it's really based on these two factors. One is the clarity of the vision, and two is the ability to execute. And the companies that have both are the ones that, you know, have become recommended companies. I think that mindset is pretty important.
Well, I also think that whenever Dan would launch into that, and by the way, I'm never supposed to say this, Kevin, my view of what he was saying was almost exactly the same as yours, except... It's the same as what I just mentioned 10 minutes ago. What level are we talking about? We're talking about the companies that maybe do some of the paving, maybe do some of this, maybe do storage for some certain things. Those people actually I use the term blue collar run a place, where they have to give a crap about their customers, their employees. You contrast them with kind of what's been going on in the world over the last several administrations. You compare that to somebody who's got his nose totally up his ass, the ass of government, or some drug company that, you know, grabs somebody else's research, gets a patent, and makes billions of dollars. That is so far different than what you and I and Dan are talking about. To me, it's like a different world. And I don't know what the world.
And success there may last for quite a while, but you have to ask yourself if it's really sustainable.
I used to agree with that totally, Kevin. But if you're good at what you do, it's sort of like the people who Forest Labs, I think, was the first drug company that I know of that moved offshore and didn't have to pay taxes. Well, they paid minuscule taxes. They went to Bermuda, I think. And all of a sudden now you have these, you know, to be blunt, a lot of these companies look have amazing research. You know, when anybody's getting anywhere in a university or in a small company on any kind of new drug or any new breakthrough or something, they have amazing research, and the first thing they do is block the shit out of them, and then they buy them, right? That's a whole different sort of skill set. Well, if you're the guy cheating overseas and paying 5% tax versus the person here who's paying 30, you have an amazing leg up on that. I don't think you ever have to develop a drug again in your life. You're so far away from the people I deal with, the people you deal with, the people Dan deals with. You're not even in the same world. I mean, and I don't know how you stop all that, but it makes things very unfair. And I think we're seeing, and I'm not going to blame Trump. He's only been there for 6 months. It's been going on for like a real long time, and I don't think it's healthy. I just don't. But I mean, who knows? I could be wrong.
Well, it's not healthy, but it's also, I think we do tend to focus on these large corporations, and they have an outsized influence. But when it comes to, you know, how we operate, like where I live, when we get away from the major corporation centers of, you know, the major population centers, basically, then you do have a different approach to how things are done. And, I think those kinds of companies are more outsized where I live. They have more influence than the major corporations that probably, you know, where you live, and especially where you operate in the investment world, where they have outsized influence. I think, you know, most.
Well,
of the people,
I mean, careful with that, because
in other words, how people live and work and operate within the confines of the business climate is very localized.
I'm going to say careful with that, because Kevin and I have known each other a really, really long time. I'm going to say you spent, and by the way, you sound good, and I hope you live to be 200 and still fighting with me. I bet you spent more in the 5 days in the hospital than you spent on anything else in your neighborhood for the last 2 years. And that place is totally...
Haven't seen the final bill yet.
But I mean, all the stuff in there, I mean, if you got a shot in the ass of penicillin that somebody bought for $2 in India, I'll bet your bill's 200, 250. Now, I'm sure you didn't.
I can't imagine what a week's worth of IV antibiotics is going to cost.
That's what I'm saying. And so you can't really get away from it. I mean, if you end up going to buy a new car, for instance, good luck with that. I mean, I think one of the guys here in the building just bought a 2018 pickup. And I don't know, he's got a payment plan on the thing. They hit him up with a $5,000 warranty on the thing because it was off warranty or something, Kevin. Good Lord. I mean, that's above a lot of people's pay grade, isn't it? You know, the things that are 8 years old, for God's sake. Just saying.
I guess you aren't totally insulated from economic conditions, but what I am saying is, you know, how employers operate, how businesses operate is somewhat different.
Right. And
how they see themselves, you know, having a role in the community is different.
I mean, and the thing we're slightly jousting about here, so when I say slightly, those are, you're in my kind of places. Yet once in a while you have to step back and say, gee, the top, I think I'm right on this, but I could be wrong. Don't send this one home to Ma. I think what, the top two companies are worth more than the entire Russell or something? I mean, we kind of reached that stage, right?
Surprised me, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a, I don't know about the entire Russell, but maybe the stuff that are in the Russell Index or something. It can't be the entire Russell because there's a couple thousand companies there. But, yeah, I mean, the values of these things are just, I mean, I was reading, and I was going to ask you a serious question. What is it? They're talking about NVIDIA here, that NVIDIA's top two mystery customers made up 39% of quarter two revenue. How the hell can they be mystery customers? Well, that's danger, Will Robinson, isn't it? I mean, having so much tied up in a couple people, even though a couple people probably pretty big. Customer A.
Well, how does that expose you to innovation from other companies?
I mean, there's a million things. That's what I'm asking you. First of all,
saying is somebody comes out with a better product, mystery customers may be gone real fast.
Who do you think customer A is? 23% of total revenue. How could somebody not know who they are if they're buying a quarter of the guy's shipments? And customer B comprised 16%, according to the company's second quarter filing. Who do you think that is? It's got to be probably Google and Microsoft, you think, or what? I hope it's not China.
Yeah, I couldn't even begin to speculate.
Yeah, me neither. I mean, I guess if you were a follower of NVIDIA, and one out of four trucks is going to the same place, don't you think you'd be able to figure it out?
Yeah, I would guess that probably anybody, if I took a little time, did a little research, would probably figure it out. It wouldn't take that long. Because first of all, your list of who those companies are is going to be a pretty short list.
Well, they're talking about somewhere in this neighborhood of Microsoft, Amazon, Google, and Oracle. But the thing, now, whether or not those numbers are good or bad, I mean, you and I could kind of speculate and pull something out of our behind. But this is what's weirder, I think. 23% is A, 16% is B. Last year, the top two customers were 14 and 11. Now, that trend, I would say, is troubling. Wouldn't you? I don't know. 14.
Say they're probably spending a whole lot of time sucking up to a couple of customers.
Well, I mean, if somebody says it's 14, you and I might think it's high, but should it be what, 13? Should it be 12? I mean, I don't know. But if it goes up 9% in 1 year, I don't know what that. I'm not so sure that's positive. But I don't know. I don't know. It's not like I'm going to sell them because of it like that or anything. But it just seems weird to me, doesn't it? The reason why when little known story, when Pullman was being bought by Wilbrader Fry, my dear departed friend Robin used to be on the show with us. She was the assistant treasurer, and I was, you know, kind of the head analyst. And we got all these. They said you got to put up something together as to what the company's going to make the next 2 or 3 years. And so, you know, we got Pullman Freight, we got Pullman Trailmobile. Pullman Swindell was part of it at the time. Pullman Kellogg was part of the time. So Robin and I got all these numbers, and, you know, we got the big 14 sheets of paper, and, of course, I'm doing all the calculation, and she's bitching at me. Typical. But we get it all together, and we had the freight division doing $1 billion in sales, Kevin, in the next year or two. 85% or some huge number. Remember the firm ITEL?
Yeah.
For those that don't know, ITEL... I'm not going to go too long here, but back in the railroad world, you could get a boxcar and just buy the damn thing, and you could ship to California. You don't get your boxcar back for 2 years, because if it goes to California and somebody else uses it, goes to Washington. It just, even though it was your boxcar, it was kind of in the pool. So ITEL said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to have all the railroads just lease these cars. Because then you don't care where it is. It's not yours. It's not somebody else's. You just lease an X number of cars, and you don't care if the cars that you're using are your cars or somebody else's cars. What's the difference? So it was somewhat of a decent idea. I don't know what happened to them, Kevin, but at one point they were like 80% of Pullman's backlog. And during the time Robin and I are putting this together, and there was a couple other people helping us, they go out of business. They went bankrupt, and the entire backlog disappeared. This is before we publish this. So Robin says, "Hey, I think we just lost our $1 billion." And I go, "I think you're probably right. We ran that one.
You misplaced it.
We ran that one up the chain," and somebody goes, "I don't think these people know who Itel is. Just publish it the way you got it." I think it was in the Wall Street Journal. It's going to make all this money. 6 months later, the freight division was closed. So I'm not saying that's going to happen to NVIDIA, because it's not 80%, and they got all kinds of other people. But it can be really weird when you lose a customer, right? If they're that big, like you were alluding to. What if somebody comes out with something?
Like I said, you're going to spend a lot of time making everything good.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about the quality level of NVIDIA's production. So they may have a really good production process where they operate very efficiently, and they can price compete when they need to. So they may have a lot of things going on that where they'll be able to defend their customer base and not lose them. Like I said, you worry about some big innovative breakthrough that somebody else has that takes away your two biggest customers. But they may totally have the ability to keep their customers satisfied. I don't know. But if they don't, if they have quality issues, someone's going to come steal their lunch.
Well, what do you, these numbers they put on these servers, or chips they call them, they look a lot bigger than a chip on your pinky, like you were saying
the other day. Processors is an easier way to think of it.
They're not sending these to China, and then all of a sudden they are sending some of these in China. And to be honest, maybe you and Carl could figure that out, but I'm sitting there going, wait, you didn't ship any of them, but oh, by the way, you got this other one you're shipping them. It's kind of close, and you're negotiating to be able to do the first one and back again. Because for me, Kevin, and I'm leading you down this road here, you don't know it yet. We do a lot of work here on concentration issues, and a lot of times you get stocks that are in the Chicago area have been hot. When I say hot, people have worked there. We've always had UPS. Now we've got some Accenture. We've got you always had the Apples and those kinds of things. But this NVIDIA is becoming a concentrated issue that we're dealing with for people. We're about to. A few people I think are signing up. They have a lot of NVIDIA and want me to take a look at that. Now, from a not options and this one, but priced here and priced there, say the stock's 180. It was 180 this morning. Now it's 178.22. It's down a buck and a half, or $1.90. Now, if you're going to protect that position, I'm not asking you for prices on calls and puts or anything like that. To protect something, you essentially have to buy protection, which means puts. And if you want to get, or you can say, I don't think it's going much higher, and you can sell out of the money calls, which would be covered, and you can say, I don't know if it's going to get there, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, but if you're going to, when you buy put protection, and again, it says nothing to do with prices, it has nothing to do with recommendations, you can do it a bunch of different ways. You can say, man, I want to lock in this price like right now. So you could buy, say it's 180, you could buy the 180 puts. Your only risk till whatever, say bottom out 6 months, the only risk is really how much you paid for the put, essentially the insurance, because you can sell it at 180. But if you paid $20 for the puts, well, that's your risk. Just like, your car. If you run your car up against a tree, what's your risk is how much you paid for the insurance, right? Because then they'll buy the car from you. Your car insurance is essentially a put. But now you might say, I think NVIDIA is, it's a little high. But boy, at 50 or 150, it's a screaming deal. So you could buy the 180 puts, sell the 150 puts, and essentially buy that piece of the insurance. It's akin to saying, I have a Mercedes, I just paid $80,000 for the damn thing. If I get in a crack up, probably the cost to fix it's going to be $25,000. It's probably not going to be totally total where I get nothing for it. So you could conceivably buy, $25,000. I don't think auto insurance priced that way, but you can do that with puts. You can buy a piece of it. I don't know if I feel comfortable with that here. I mean, I don't know if I'm smart enough to say, yeah, you need to protect it at 180, but at 150, it's a screaming buy. some of these stocks are just too high for that, Kevin. I don't know that you can buy a piece of it here. I mean, it's not like I'm an expert on how much risk are in these places. You know, I've seen stocks go from 65 to 6, like in Cisco, and I'm not predicting that, but there are times when you think, really, the stock doesn't have much further to go. I don't know now if you're picking even Apple or even you know, some of the other big houses like Microsoft. I mean, are you willing to say Microsoft's 510? Worst case, it can only go to 470. I don't know if I can make that statement. Can you? This really comes down to odd times when you're trying to pay for this kind of stuff and advise people on it, because I'm not sure that I can just I can be one of the guys on TV who actually doesn't do anything for anybody. It says, oh man, the market's really ripe for a 5% correction, but then it's a screaming buy. Boy, I don't know if it's down 5%. All of a sudden, it's a screaming buy to you. I mean, what sent it down to 5%? Don't we have to know what that one is first?
Well, in many of those cases, in many of the cases of those companies too, I'm not even sure that I would call, you know, Microsoft a big innovator anymore, or do what I call Apple an innovation company anymore. So, you know, I got questions about them in general anyway. So
they seem big enough to go grab the innovator, though. Microsoft's been doing that for years.
Well, yeah, they've been just stealing stuff for years, yeah.
Well, if you think they're going to keep doing that, what difference does it make if they're an innovator? All they do is keep their eyes open, right?
Well, that might be a way of innovating. You know, that could be a strategy. But, I'm not sure that they're pushing the envelope like they once did.
Well, that brings us into the thing we started the other day. You know, what's the Intel argument? They make a lot of stuff more here than other people, but they've been kind of a management morass for what, 25 years? Are they your horse here? I don't know. What do you think?
I think a lot of companies get fat, dumb, and happy easily.
Yeah, if you were going to move toward getting more chip manufacturer here, would they be your horse? I don't know enough about the business. Maybe you and Carl do more, but is there anybody else here that does it? Where does AMD make all their stuff? Are they here or are they totally overseas?
Don't know. I think most companies make a lot of their stuff overseas, though.
Well, does anybody here make the tiny little chips that go into the other stuff into the board itself? The little silicon wafers, are any of those made here?
Aren't those all made at doesn't Taiwan Semiconductor make all of them?
I think they sort of do. I mean,
there's companies that will design their own chips and then farm it out to a foundry that manufactures them.
What's the investment there? Is it dirty? Is it the silicon? Is it the hourly wage? Is it the equipment? I mean, what are we used to say in chemistry? What's the rate determining step? If you want to do that here, I'm sure you could train them. Is it just once when you've been in business so long, and you get the machines that just stamp the stuff out and it'll take you forever to duplicate?
I think that's part of it. I think the other part of it is that it takes a long time to get up and running. And, you know, the typical model that companies use doesn't really like things that have long paybacks. I suspect that we'll see that changed in a large degree, and you know, certainly in the semiconductor business, we'll probably see it a lot, because that's where the government's going to try and push it. They tried to do that with the CHIPS Act. I don't think a lot of the stuff in the CHIPS Act got where it was supposed to get, but it requires a different thought process for you to suddenly say, I can handle something that has a 7-year payback for me on my CapEx.
Well, this is not...
Because we like our 12-month paybacks now.
Well, but it's also not unique to... I don't know how much a lot of the listeners know about manufacturing, and I know a little bit about it, but my nephew, his metalworking place, they supply stuff to Tootsie Roll. You know, because Tootsie Roll has, you know, parts that break, and sometimes they need them done quickly, or conveyors that break, and these guys will do that on short notice. But my nephew went for a tour, and he goes, it was one of the most fascinating things I've ever seen. They only have one plant over by Ford City in the southwest side here.
Okay.
They make, what the hell is selling? They make a million pieces of candy a day in the place. Because these machines are so sophisticated. A lot of them were made, they're all kind of made internally, where they had their own people, where they might have bought the original one from Germany or someplace in 1950-something, and they just redesigned and redesigned and redesigned, and he goes, all the stuff that has to come together for to make a Tootsie Roll pop, the little sucker thing with the Tootsie Roll inside, because it's fascinating to watch. I mean, this stuff is not easy. And there's no way on earth you and I could go to the market and get $1 billion and in 6 months be competing with those people. I wonder if stamping out the little semiconductors is sort of the same way. There's just been such a wealth of knowledge and machinery and those kinds of things that you wouldn't know how to start. I mean, pretty much railroad cars were the same way. I mean, Pullman had all these machines going back 100 years. I mean, how would you even look at a bare plant and say, I'm going to build a railroad car? I mean, it's nowhere near on the same level, but it's sort of the same thing.
Experience matters. The longer you do something, presumably, the better you're going to get at it.
Yeah, and I mean, I wonder what, you know, what...
It can be, you know, being out ahead of everybody can be a big advantage. Now, being first to market on some things also can be a disadvantage because the next person comes along with a better level of innovation and just kicks your butt. So a lot of it has to do with timing. You start working your way down the experience curve and getting really good at it, getting high levels of quality, learning to, you know, getting leaner, getting more cost out of your process, all of those things. You start doing that, and it's hard for others to catch up.
Yeah, I mean, it could almost be, at a certain level, it could almost be impossible, really. I mean, unless somebody stole your stuff. But even so, it's hard to... I mean, I guess what I'm fishing for here is when we were looking to bring this, quote, this stuff back, some of this manufacturing, was it ever really here? I guess I don't... Maybe that's what Carl questioned as well. Did we ever have massive amounts of chip? Were we ever able to make massive amounts of the tiny little chips here? Do we even make the transistors here? Maybe we did. I don't know. So going back so far.
Yes.
We did. All right. Well, I'm just saying, I mean, I don't know how long it's been. I don't know what the time frame. I don't know what the ramp up is. Can anybody really compete? I mean, these are all kinds of questions when you start winging money at stuff like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, but... Could we? Yes. By the way, Zilog, which was one of the early manufacturers of CPUs in Milpitas, California.
Okay. Well, did National Semi ever make semiconductors? I mean, what did they?
But I'm saying this is. But Zilog was formed by an Italian physicist in 1974. He had previously worked at Intel. They produced the Z80, which was a compatible chip with the Intel 8080 with a number of extensions. It was a much better processor, and in fact was one that I wrote an awful lot of code for. And it was made in America.
Well, what's the time frame and investment in people and stuff to actually get when you say chip manufacturer, are we talking about the little piece, the little tiny little piece that goes on your fingernail, or are we talking about the things together? Are we talking about the assembler? I'm lost on this.
Well, so, I mean, you know, today chips are much smaller than they used to be because the size of the transistors has decreased by an enormous amount. Okay. Oh, by the way, the Z80 has been discontinued, sadly. That chip was the processor, okay? So it was the actual CPU and all the logic related to it. Then externally to that, you had to have memory, right? Which is still true in a lot of things. Not in everything anymore, because as the density of the chips has gone up and the operating clock speeds have gone up, putting more and more on that one die has become essential because you run into physics limitations with the speed of light in terms of how quickly you can get a signal from one place to another. So having it go through multiple things and in multiple places on the board, of course, takes longer. So, you know, decreasing that, it becomes part of your performance envelope, if you will. And that, of course, means putting more of them on, you know, on the one chip. So when you start talking about, like, these AI things that that NVIDIA is producing, the reason that this thing looks more like a single board computer rather than
a chip. I mean, it's you need almost two hands to hold it. So.
Right. The reason it looks more like a single board computer than a chip is because the only way that you can get the kind of operating speed that they have is to integrate all of these things together on the one, you know, on the one actual carrier, because the length of the circuit trace starts to become a factor. And in fact, it ends up being the limiting factor on processing power.
How many people make what Kevin and I were? I was talking about the tiny little thing that most people call a chip. How many people are making those? Is it all just Taiwan?
Well, these days, to a large degree, yeah. This is, I mean, one of the reasons that Intel, one of the reasons that the administration got so interested in Intel, and one of the reasons that it's not just Trump's administration. Biden's was
very, yeah, I mean, they're all kind of the same place, yeah.
Right, but one of the reasons they got so interested in it is that Intel is one of the very few companies that still has an actual foundry of, you know, that can actually make chips and has a fab here in the United States.
You mean the little tiny beginner chip they can still make?
No, that's not how it's done. What they do is it's actually a photographic kind of process. It's lithography, and you make a very large wafer that has a whole crap ton of them on there, and then they're separated off, and the ones that pass get turned into chips, okay, into processors or whatever they are, and the rest get binned, and there is a reject rate. So, you know, if you make 1,000 of them, if you have, you know, this huge wafer that has, that has 100 or 200 or however many are on there, not all of them are good. And so some percentage of them end up in the, you know, in the scrap pile. The yield is of course, a huge, huge thing on your
property. But aren't they, that was one of the issues when I was on the Y2K board way back in the day. Aren't most, if 20 of them out of the 100 are considered really good, 20 of them are horse bleep, the other 60 are like kind of sold as seconds, right? Where they're not good for a computer, but they might be okay for a phone or for the seat in your car, right?
They used to anyway.
I mean,
well, yeah, sort of. I mean, so there are different grades. There's, you know, military specification units. As well as those sold for example, in an automotive environment, have a much wider temperature tolerance requirement than consumer grade stuff. So there is a qualification thing, but there's two elements of that, and there's also grading that goes on for speed grades as well. So the ones that they're functional, but they don't work at the higher clock rates, are sold as, you know, they're not really seconds, but they are sold at a cheaper price. They're just, they're spec'd for a lower clock. And so there is a lot of that kind of thing that does go on. There you are. Does that mean that, you know, if you have one of the faster ones and you clock it slower, you could do that? Well, I suppose you could. I don't know why anybody would do that. Why would you only use 80% of what you paid for? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, so there's a lot of, for those.
To tie back to what we were saying before, too, as Carl described the yield on it, that's part of the ramp up. You can get up and running, but can you get up and running and be operating at the higher yield levels on there so that you truly are profitable? And it takes time to get that too. Just looking at it from a business standpoint, this is why they talk about this having long lead times to get up and running. You can probably have something running next year, but can you have something running efficiently next year?
That is part of the problem, is that when you start these things are not trivial to do. okay? It's building these plants is a... These things, you know, people talk about clean rooms, okay? And most people don't understand exactly what that really means in you know, the today context. Hard disks, for example, actually spinning, rotating media has to be assembled and maintained within that, and then the unit is hermetically sealed. And modern ones are actually helium-filled, so they don't have a filter and exchange with the atmosphere. They're actually filled full of helium and then sealed at the factory. And that's because helium, being a much smaller molecule and lighter, has less rotational resistance, so therefore, you know, it's also homogeneous. It doesn't have any moisture embedded in it, whatever have you. And as a result, the tolerances are tighter. But that's the kind of thing that we're, you know, that we've gotten into. We're starting to run into those kinds of limits. So like all the disks that I have in my main server today are the actual rotating part of it is a sealed unit because it was constructed and filled full of helium and sealed at the factory. And if anything happens to that seal, the unit is junk.
Well, I mean, it's, I guess if somebody laid us off, the three of us, $50 billion, you'd have to be helping with you and Kevin, or else I'd be totally lost. I mean, I don't think we can pick up a catalog and get to the page where it says, you know, chip maker and buy one. I mean, a lot of it's all got to be designed by your people. You probably wouldn't even want to do one exactly the same as anybody else has had one, right? I mean, the skill set to put one of these places together, it's probably all got to be done from scratch, doesn't it?
Yeah, they're all every one of them is bespoke. There is no factory, you know, model. Okay, you know, here's but then again, that's, you know, Chief, that's true of most
some, not all. I mean, I was just talking about Tootsie Roll earlier. It is for them, but I mean, we couldn't go open up the phone book and say, give me a Tootsie Roll maker and buy one. I mean,
right. I'm just saying that there's, you know, certainly there's, you know, there's the place to call if you want to, you know, if you want a punch press, right?
Yeah.
But when you're talking about high volume production lines for stuff like this, those lines are typically bespoke things.
Right, and where do you find the people to do that?
Well, they make an awful lot of money, the ones that are good, and they're, you know, this is one of the sets of skills. It is of extreme strategic importance to any country to have that in house, within their nation, and we have stupidly allowed that to a large degree to disappear, and that's dumb. But, you know, we've done it, and we've incentivized it. We've allowed it through the tax schemes that we let companies play, and, you know, stuff like this. We allow the, you know, as I've talked about for a long time, and it's been a feature of my time on the show, we allow the exploitation of the environment and labor by people in offshore entities on a routine and ongoing basis, and we consider it to be a sport. That's really stupid, and we've been, you know, but we do it because it makes people's stock prices go up. You know, the cheapest labor is the labor that costs no money. So,
well, but a lot of we still have Kevin. A lot of it, I mean, when we have, despite the fact that all we do is joust not on the show, we come up with a lot of good stuff, and I think we pretty much have the same set of morals on all this stuff. I never was the kind of person that was okay with somebody overseas making my blue jeans for 10 cents an hour. I think a lot of people, I don't know if they thought about it, I'm not going to accuse them, if they thought about it, they don't care, they just choose not to think about it, and that's kind of a way of not caring, wouldn't you say?
That's the same thing though, Chief.
I'm trying to be nice to those people.
All I'm saying, look, you know, I my column this morning on the contributor side, because if I put it on the public side against advertising, I would probably get thrown off AdSense by Google. Talks about the feeding of delusions, and it focuses on in, you know, the context of the crap that's going on in the CDC right now. Right? But it certainly is not only there. it permeates American business and American public policy. This nonsense about, you know, so-called clean energy, for example, is it a nice fantasy? Yes, it is. But that's exactly what it is. It's a fantasy. And the problem with it is not that it doesn't work, because it does work when it works. The problem is you want your lights to work whenever you want to turn on the switch. That's the issue. And therefore, you cannot use it and expect it to be reliable. Now, if you don't care about that because you have a backup and you have something else available, whatever have you, then it's fine. I don't have any quarrel with doing that. That's okay. But nobody ever takes that into account when they do the pricing. They also, you know, the thing that's been running around for the last, you know, 10 years is, well, you know, solar and wind, new installation solar wind is cheaper than new installation or maintaining installations of coal. There's this fight going on right now where Trump has ordered a plant, coal plant in Michigan, to stay open, and Consumers Energy is screaming about it because, you know, God, that's expensive, da 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 da. And it's like, yeah, and they say, well, you know, but the solar we want to put in is cheaper. That's only true when the sun is shining.
Yeah, they're not the same.
They're not the same energy source, okay? And the thing is but they're all, everybody conflates one thing with another, and they're not the same thing. And that's a problem.
Well, Kevin, you still with us?
Yeah, I am. I mean, these are standard skills that people just don't seem to have anymore.
Yeah.
In this case, you know, you're doing risk assessment. I mean, it isn't that, you know, as we look at it, if you just look at the cost of things, that's fine. But what happens when the sun doesn't shine? We're kind of screwed. This it's pretty basic skill set for, you know, how to look at your business, and people don't do that.
This is one of the things, you know, when I put MCS up, we had all these different people downtown. One of the reasons we moved our main business offices and our technical operations into the city, into the actual city core, was that we were able to get competitive access to high-speed data circuits from more than one company. In other words, other than Ameritech. Okay, I mean, that was the reason we did it. But there's a problem with that. Are they really diverse? Is there real diversity of actual routing? If, for example, the coal tunnels flood again, duh, because somebody was stupid drilling a hole near a bridge. Gee, that has never happened before, right, Chief?
Well, especially like the fact that they knew there was a hole and didn't fix it.
Well, you know, I mean, yeah, if there's idiocy in one specific place, right? If Mo, Larry, and Curly show up today to work,
yeah,
in one place, how many of the suppliers of the essential things that we have to remain in operation and to serve our customers, how many of them go offline at once? And if the answer is enough of them that I'm shut down, then that is a business risk that I have to look at and say, all right, am I willing to live with that business risk, or is that unacceptable? Nobody does this anymore. All right, and the idea that we have this company that is supposedly the center of the universe with so-called artificial intelligence, NVIDIA, that has nearly half their revenue coming from two companies, that's nuts.
Sure it is. Hey, Kevin, I want to, when Carl was talking about the, you know, the offshoring, the pollution, those kinds of things, just in your read of human beings, and you see more of them in the day than most anybody, the attitude we have toward pollution here, and it's obviously changed in our lifetime. Is it a moral thing that you don't want to pump out bad stuff because people are going to die, or is it in this country, like, was it Wilmette Harbor, the who are the guys that made the outboards? Was it Evinrude? So they poured all the crap in the harbor, and finally they said, okay, you guys got to clean it up. And it turned out it broke the company, right? Cleaning it up and, you know, lawsuits of people dying from stuff. Is the fact that it will turn around and bite you in the ass in this country, at least to a certain extent, is that what causes people to not want to pollute, or have they somehow turned moral? I mean, in China and India, I don't think there's a justice system that if you pollute a river and a thousand people die, I'm not so sure it makes any difference, because the government owns the company, right?
As I look at companies and get exposed to all different kinds of companies, I think it's a combination. There are some that have, you know, that have a strong ethical core from the top down, and they're just not going to do things like that. I even remember going back to, my goodness, the early 80s, and I remember Bob Foy, who was the executive VP at Aon Corporation, and I don't even remember who the company was, but you know, he said, I don't care how good the deal is, we don't do business with people like that. So, you know, there is a certain amount of that, but there are people that are completely amoral about it, and that's, you know, that'll walk you into trouble.
Well, the reason you need laws is because there's a substantial percentage of the population that's amoral and they don't care.
Yeah, I'm since we've been,
even if substantial is you know 20%, that's still
listen, that 20% will get you all killed.
Yeah.
I mean, if your water supply gets poisoned in the city of Chicago, you know, you're all cooked. Not just the 20%.
Well, when was because I can remember in grad school, when we were talking about boy, I tell you, all this stuff comes together, doesn't it? When we were trying to design executive bonus packages, and I remember the professor, this might have been after Love Canal or something. He goes, you got to be careful you don't incent somebody to pour the pollution in the river to get a bonus.
Right. When
2 years later you're going to find out about it, it's going to cost you four times as much to clean the river up when the new guy's there. So you can't incent people to do stuff like that. So it was already on the, you know, business dollars and cents stuff in the 70s, you know, pollution.
Chief, but that's, you know, that's the thing is that, you know, when I was growing up as a kid, okay, I mean, I grew up in the shadow of a blast furnace that opened up every night, open hearth. Okay.
Wow.
And you could see it. It turned the sky red every night when it, you know, when they poured. Now, was that a good thing or a bad thing? Well, you know, someday maybe, you know, two extra eyes will appear in the back of my head or something like that, right? But you couldn't eat the fish in the water there near there. I mean, you just couldn't. On the other hand, you know, here we are, you know, 50, 60 years later, and you can see the bottom in that same river. So, I mean, it's... We decided in this country that we just weren't going to put up with that crap anymore. And you know, we should have done it a lot sooner than we did. But we did it. All right? And the problem I have with what's going on today, and it's across the board when it comes to any kind of industry, power generation, I've always said behind every unit of GDP is a unit of energy. I don't care. It's just, I mean, it's the truth, and there isn't any way around it, is that everything you do requires energy input, period. It doesn't matter what it is. And the idea that we can take it and shove it up some Chinaman's butt or some Indian dude's butt over there, and it didn't happen when we have deemed it unacceptable here in the United States. All right, now, if we deem it's acceptable, okay, if it's good enough for us, it's good enough for everybody else.
And that's not the way we work, you know that.
But that's not the way we work. And the thing is that then we cheer, and everything's wonderful and beautiful, and by God, you got your Tesla, and oh, by the way, that battery pack that's in there would have cost three times as much money had it been made in the United States under U.S. environmental standards.
Well, I mean, the idea with the energy stuff, and this is where I come down, and I'm always like in the middle of this stuff, even though I'm accused of not being in the middle. I mean, I understand you have to have sources of power that are good all day, right? I mean, duh. But I also know that in some areas of the country that is local, a lot of your stuff, since they used to have, you know, a couple hundred thousand people in Vegas, now they got a million, a lot of your stuff is air conditioning during the day.
Right.
So if the three of us, I think, would, I'm going to say chalk on a blackboard, showing my age, we're going to sit there and say, okay, in Vegas, what is the call for electricity between 7 in the morning and 7 at night in the summer? How much does it spike because air conditioning when the sun's up? and we're going to get a number, 20%, 25, 30, something like that, I would guess. I don't know how much manufacturing draw they have at night and things like that. Well, I'll tell you what, we can go out to Hoover Dam and look at the valley, and which way is it, southwest of there.
Oh, yeah, there's nothing.
There's nothing. We could put a bunch of solar collectors in there just to cover that 25 or 30%, and I think it would satisfy you. It would satisfy everyone. I'm not saying don't make it 80, because it's no good at night, duh.
Well, yeah, but see, here's the thing is that, I mean, I am okay with any use, you know, any particular design within the, you know, within the power distribution and generation system. Anything that pencils without the government, you know, saying you must do this because
I'm with you on that. You know, I'm with you on
or
that.
You know, or you know, whatever the particular thing is. Okay, if I'm going to take half the cost of whatever, and you know, it's as the government has done in the past and has said, well, you get this huge tax credit for putting solar panels on your roof. All right, well, guess what? You do that. Number one, you destabilize the grid, right? Which is a public bad.
Well, I'm right? with you. I'm just saying.
And on top of that, you let me rob my next door neighbor.
I'm talking about doing stuff like maybe we used to do. If this is going to cost $40 billion for this valley, and I'm just speaking out of my ass here, to provide 10% of the electricity during the day to Las Vegas and Henderson and those places. Why can't I go out, even if the government did it, why can't I go out and sell bonds, put the thing together, just like we did with Hoover Dam and the Golden Gate Bridge, and pay off the bonds over the next 20 years and have a nice return for people? Why can't we do that?
Well, because, Chief, you know we never pay off bonds.
Well, we sure as hell did Hoover Dam. We did Golden Gate Bridge.
But today we don't. When was the last time you saw an actual government issue?
Well, I mean, these are special purpose bonds. I'm talking about. I think
I understand. I'm just.
I just said why couldn't we?
because you know, why do we have $37 trillion worth of U.S. debt? Because we never.
By the way, I was specifically talking about a bond for this purpose.
No, I understand that. All right,
which brings up another question, which you always do. If they did that, is that separate from the balance sheet?
Well,
you're in running.
If there's a sewer bond in Chicago, it's paid for a separate taxing piece. That doesn't go into Chicago's books, does it?
Well, it should across the period of time, but it should be neutral.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, should it be accounted for there? Yeah, it should. Absolutely. I mean, accounting is an exact science, all right? I mean, it's, of course, the game playing that goes on nowadays isn't, but, you know, but accounting itself is supposed to be an exact science. So, yes, it should. You know, one of the interesting things about that, you know, you bring up this thing, well, you know, we could do that and, you know, we do the bonds and we retire them, whatever, da, 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 da. Okay, guess what? Where I used to live, they built a bridge called the Mid-Bay Bridge, and they did exactly that. They issued bonds, and they put a toll on the bridge, and the deal was when the bonds were paid off with the tolls, right, which the tolls paid to build the bridge, right?
Yeah.
You know, you're going to get the toll over time. You need the money now. Okay, you know, that's why you use bonds, that the tolls would be lifted, and the maintenance on the bridge would be covered by the increased tourism and taxes.
Are you talking about the Tri-State Tollway?
well, that too.
Yeah.
All right. So, you know, and then the tolls will be lifted. Well, what happens is the bridge gets built, the tolls are there, and then over the space of the 20 years that I lived there, the tolls quadrupled, the bonds were refinanced, and by the way, it went from, you know, X billion to X times 5. All of a sudden that bridge is no good. We got to extend this runway area, and that's got to be tolled. So we got to do this and da 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 da. And oh, by the way, what you sold to the public who voted on it originally, it gets hived off into this independent state-run agency that is essentially accountable.
Well, you also are in a position where,
and we all get it in the butt.
But the maintenance of the thing. It's probably cost more per year than it did to build it when you built it.
Well, but the reality is that the way it was sold to the public,
right,
was that the increase in commerce would generate enough tax revenue to cover the maintenance.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Well, that okay, guess what? That's what you were sold. Now, who went to jail for essentially bending you over the table
yeah,
under
the guy,
false pretenses
the guy was,
and sticking it in?
The guy who sold you that is dead. It was 30 years ago.
The guys that are on the board today are alive.
Well, I mean,
it still exists.
I mean, I'm one of the examples because I'm fascinated by the thing and I've read books on it. The Golden Gate Bridge, they're fanatic about maintaining the thing. And oh, by the way, this is interesting. You guys probably know this. They did a huge earthquake. The original idea was if there was an earthquake and the thing got damaged, you just cut it off and build a new one. Well, then all of a sudden they got to the point where, wait a minute, the thing's so important, we can't do that. So they had some massive study on how earthquakes would affect it. And it turned out that the bridge itself would be pretty okay. It was the access roads on both sides that would be down. So over a period of years, they pretty much brought all those up to earthquake standards. Plus, if you ever drive across it, you're going to see no matter when, there's a big tarp.
Yeah.
A lot of noise coming out of it.
Oh, yeah, because they have to keep continually redoing the finish, otherwise it'll rot and turn into nothing.
And when they get from one side to the other, they go back to the other side and start all over again.
Well, guess what? They just had that, you know, we have a bridge here that's the Gay Street Bridge in Knoxville, okay, where they did a dog bleep job of this for long enough that they had to close it because it was structurally unsound. All right, so now it's, you know, it's barricaded, and you have all these people saying that this is a conspiracy to screw with the bicycle riders that are within Knoxville. And it's like, did you guys look at the pictures that these guys posted of what they found when they got under there and started sandblasting? Half of some of these girders are gone.
Well, the
all right, you want to drive a car on that?
Well, Kevin, you remember there was a time when we were younger where a lot of these bridges in Chicago, and this is how, you know, the government, and we always bitch about the government, which we should, kind of works. Well, Chicago has all these bridges over the river, is like 20 something of them or maybe more, and where they all go up, and it's pretty cool when you see them all go up and so forth, but the maintenance is on the city. But if you don't maintain it and it gets condemned, the new bridge, you get money from the federal government,
right?
Which is kind of a squirrely way to do things. So the trick was for a while, just let it get condemned, and then you end up with a new bridge. But I think that loophole got plugged somehow. I don't think you can just do that anymore.
But Chief, that kind of game playing, okay, goes on everywhere. And I mean, you know, you look at, you know, in the context of the federal government and the BS that's going on right now. You want to throw up, all right? I nearly spit my espresso this morning because, you know, I get up and when I'm going to be on the show, I try to read around, you know, take a quick scan of all the different news sources, right? Left, right, center, whatever, you know, Fox, CNBC, CNN, you know, whatever.
Newsmax.
I tend not to look at, you know, I mean, then there's some that I consider to be, you know, in the Alex Jones category. I don't bother with them. But CNBC has one up today that's essentially a hit piece on Kennedy and the CDC and in support of the CDC doing all of these supposedly wonderful things. All right. And oh my God, everybody's up in arms because, you know, this woman who was appointed and then fired and now has refused to leave. All right. She said, well, you know, she's like, well, only the president can fire me. He says, by the way, I did get out. I told your direct boss, Kennedy, to actually tell you, but I'm the one that did it. Right? And oh, by the way, yes, you are fired. So
is that because you think he spent hours of looking at her qualifications or she did one thing he didn't like?
No, I think what it comes down to is this. And I mean, there's been enough out there that the reason it occurred is pretty transparent, all right? The AICP, which is the board of people that meet with regards to vaccine approvals, all right? The CDC over the last, not just during the crazy, but leading up to the crazy, then during the crazy, multiple times has redefined the word vaccine. Now, they do not have the ability to do that, but they've done it. All right, you cannot change the meaning of a word.
They do it all the time.
Well, people do it all the time, okay? They've done it, then they've implemented that as binding policy that ends up being taken up, and they're not the ones that make the binding policy and say, well, that's not really what we did. Well, yes, it is, because it ends up as binding policy in the school systems and everywhere else within American society. And to claim that they're not responsible for it is the most disingenuous line of BS that I've ever heard in my life. But it's nothing new, right? So the Kennedy went back and looked at this, and just on the math, and I brought this up very early on during the COVID stuff, that on the math, there was no argument at all for healthy young people to take those shots. All right, none. And that's just a math problem.
I would agree with you on that, by the way.
Now, that doesn't mean that for some people they aren't useful. It just means that on the math, because there is no such thing as a drug, not even aspirin, that is 100% safe and everybody uses it, all right? There are always going to be somebody that has a bad reaction. And you do not... And then, the other problem...
By the way, what age are they down to in this COVID? Because my doctor was irate when they were giving it to, like, two-year-olds and stuff.
Well, duh. Yeah. No, it's everybody 6 months and older now.
Oh, really? Okay.
Okay, which Kennedy put, he put his foot down and said there is no scientific support for this. Zero. I don't care if you are generally in support of vaccines or not. There's no support on the math for this, all right, at all. Now, if you're immune compromised, if you're otherwise screwed up, whatever, you're at an elevated risk, that's a different game. We're talking about healthy individuals. And he's right. All right. Well, oh my God. Well, guess what? As it turns out, this is not, when you dig into all of this and the way this machination game has been played for the last 20 years, that's not the only place this is true. All right. And one of the more serious ones that I have long been critical of is that we give every infant at birth now, by their recommendation, which turns into a mandate, hepatitis B vaccines. Okay? Now, hepatitis B is a horrible thing. If it happens, it could destroy your liver. it's bad. However, it is a bloodborne disease. If the mother does not have it, the only way that infant gets it is through IV drug abuse or sex.
Yeah, I get it.
Now, there is no argument. Now, that doesn't mean that there isn't a time that maybe you want to take that shot. But there is no argument to give it to an infant.
If you are a bartender in Nevada, don't you have to have your hepatitis B shot?
Well, see, this is... Chief, this is the thing. I mean,
What's the guy going to do, bleed in your scotch?
Well, but even if he does, it's not going to do anything.
I know. I get it.
I mean, it has to get into your body.
Yep.
Okay? It's...
Well, your scotch is going in your body.
Down your throat.
Yeah,
that's not going to. Never mind that the scotch is going to desiccate anything that might be in there. Right?
Yeah, probably.
Well, I'm just saying.
Yeah, I get it.
But the my quarrel with all of this, and this is Kennedy. I have issues with Kennedy. All right. I mean, you asked whatever you think about the guy, and I've been asked this by other people as well. I have issues with some of the things that Kennedy has said and done in his, in his public life, if you will.
He's kind of off the rails.
Well, but when you're right, and it doesn't matter if otherwise you're a lunatic, okay? Correct is correct, and that's it. And when we are talking about areas of public health, when we are talking about government agencies that are setting what amounts to mandates, and they cannot defend the mathematics of what they are trying to shove down your throat, I got a problem with that. And anybody that is willing to take a chainsaw to that process and stop it gets my support.
Well, as I mentioned yesterday, the three levels of government that I'm dealing with are the city, the state, and Trump.
Yeah.
I don't know if any three of them are capable of thinking at all on what they just said, if they take it out 3 years and have some kind of idea of the ramifications. And
Well, that's a problem. And you know, the thing is that, as you know, as I've pointed out, one of the biggest issues I have with the way that this is all being done and has been done for the last 20 years, and it goes, you know, it's not just, it was even, I mean, it was when Clinton was in office, we're crying out loud, and I was running a company, right? So it's not just, you know, people are like, oh, you just didn't like Obama because he's black. No, I didn't like Obama because he was a nut when it came to a number of things, and he got
co-opted so fast, it was scary.
Yeah, and he did a number of things that were absolutely unsupportable. Oh, by the way, I was all over Bush for the same stuff, all right? So, I mean, you know, and people seem to forget that when Trump was being impeached beforehand, when he was, you know, when he was first running for office, I pointed out that the probability that he was going to actually implement any of the health reforms was zero, and yet he was running on that as a major part of
his platform. He still has it. He still has it.
And he still hasn't done a damn thing about it. And here we are, you know, round two.
Well, what
right?
we got to go to break here. We went through our first break because stuff we were talking about with Kevin was so good. The vision of the world economically that seems to be permeating out of this White House. And I don't know if it's him or who it is. To me, I have a real problem with it. Now, other people think it might be okay. Obviously, if you live in Germany, you think it's okay because that's the way they've been for 80 years, maybe 100 years. But this guy, he just fired from the Amtrak board, or he's a railroad regulator. This guy Primus. It appears that the only reason why the guy was fired, and I don't know if it's the only reason, is that he was the only guy to vote no on the Canadian National Kansas City Southern merger. So now this merger is going through between what, the Union Pacific and Norfolk and Southern, which I think is an absolutely horrendous idea. Is Trump afraid that this guy's going to vote no on that? Well, I think the answer is probably yes. Now, my question is, what vision, if he has any at all, which I mean, he has some, what vision does Trump have of this country where he wants essentially two railroads that have to, you know, kneel down before him every morning or something? I mean, that's not my America. It appears to be his. Some people think that's okay. Some people don't know where we're going with it. Maybe they haven't put it together. But I'm appalled by it, to be honest with you. S&P futures up, down 13. The S&P is 97. We come back some here. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jacks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ricky on the board. S&P futures down 19. NASDAQ futures down 118. It's slightly up from when we came in. We have the Dow down 141, individual stocks. NVIDIA's down $1.80. Nothing much there. We got Caterpillar down 11. They didn't have earnings, but it's down 11. They've been up pretty strong lately, however. See, over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 42.2%, FTSE down 18.2%, CAC around down 24.3%. So they're all snoozing to the low side here with the three-day weekend coming up in this country. Over there, I assume they're working on Monday, but probably will be a slow day. Over in Asia, Nikkei down 110.3%, Hang Seng up 78.3%. They've been on a roll. So in Shanghai, up again, up 14.34%. All the people on TV are telling you, buy stuff in China. Boy, careful with that one. 10-year up 1 basis point, 4.22. The Bund unchanged, 2.70. Oil down 20 cents, 64.40. Brent down 35 cents, 68.27. Gold has been up yesterday, only down $6. It was down more than that earlier, 34.68. Silver down 18 cents, 39 even. Foreign exchange, dollars 116.54. Down a little bit for the month, but down, it's been strong the last week or so. British pound 134.5. Crypto down $1,200, 110.923. 2 weeks ago, I'm going to say it was over 120, so it's down 9%. What do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Cub Blues again.
Hey.
Sox Blues.
Ugh. Good morning, Chief. It's currently 7:33 a.m. here in Chicago. We got 58 degrees right now with a high of 67. Mostly sunny and less humid. Tonight we have increasing amount of clouds with a shower in spots late and a low of 58 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 85 degrees right now with a high of 105. Very warm with times of clouds and sunshine. Tonight will be clear with a low of 83 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, we're looking at 25 minutes. Inbound Kennedy from Montrose. Edens from Lane Cook, 42 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf, 39 minutes. 24 minutes, then Ryan from 95th. And lastly, Stevenson from 24 to the Den Ryan, 44 minutes. Let's talk MLB real quick. Diamondbacks beat Brewers 6-4. Cubs lose to Giants 3-4. And White Sox lose to Yankees 10-4. Today we got Yankees at White Sox, 6:40 p.m. Cubs at Rockies, 7:40 p.m. And Diamondbacks at Dodgers, 9:10 p.m. Back to you guys.
PCE up 0.2% for the month, 2.6 on the year. Can't get any details out of there. So I don't know. What do you think about the PCE, Carl? Just punt it?
I don't know that you can punt it because it's what the Fed prefers, right?
How does anybody know that? Or somebody said it once and they keep repeating it?
It's one of those deals that, I mean, this is, you know, as I put up the other day, Congress could fix this in an afternoon and should, but of course won't because the market would throw up.
Yeah.
Which is the monetary policy can be trivially defined as the short-term funds rate is the deficit percentage on a 12-month run rate of the federal government, which is the credit emission, the unbacked credit emission of the federal government, less half of the productivity increase on a 12-month run rate. Why half? Because realistically, you ought to get all of it because you're the one that generated it. But we'll let the federal government have half the seigniorage. I think that's their seigniorage that they're allowed to take, and we'll let them do that. Plus about 50 basis points because time has value and you can never get back today. And it's purely mechanical. And if we did that, then today's short-term rates would be 7-ish.
Well, I mean I don't know if any of these kinds of formulas necessarily. When people don't do the job that they're supposed to be doing, trying to come up with a formula to make them do the job to me is always pretty useless.
Well, yeah, I mean the problem with any time you have people who can blame the other guy, and yet the actual cause of the thing is interconnection between the entities, okay, and what they do within that interconnection. But I can point a finger at you, you can point a finger at me. Nobody actually has to take credit, if you will, for any of it, right? You're going to have trouble because how do you reconcile this? How do you get that in a place where you say, okay, this is how we fix it, all right? I mean, you take a look at what's going on today within this paradigm from an economic point of view. And I can look at all kinds of crazy things, including the nut job stuff that happened in Minnesota yesterday. But if you take a look at all of these different elements and you say, how in the horse bleep did that happen, right? The answer is that it shouldn't have, ever. Like, ever, right? But it clearly did, okay? So what do you do there, right? I mean, that's a really serious problem.
Well, you managed to... Earlier, you talked about, was you or Kevin or the Bodius, you guys talked about changing the definition of vaccines.
Yeah.
And I actually went out and bought about a 40-year-old Webster.
So
I got to look them up every once in a while. And I don't know how you deal with what the Fed does when they've managed to scrub any reference to money supply out of anybody's daily talk or weekly or
right
month. And then when in fact that's the whole deal and
right
and the weird part is and I, boy I know it was like it was like I was sitting in class was yesterday all I mean Milton Friedman as time went by his judgment of economic freedom somehow causing political freedom and those kinds of things.
Oh, it's turned out a complete crap, didn't it?
Well, it turned out that some people were able to be totalitarians, and actually the people who stayed in being totalitarians, like the Chinese, did loosen up fairly dramatically on some percentages of economic freedom. The markets and things like that. Anyway, he was wrong there. But he was not wrong on what happens with money and the book, The Monetary History of the United States, that he wrote. I mean, nobody else could have written it. I mean, the amount of research that went into that is scary. Every chart in the damn thing must have taken a month. But the idea that we have a Fed that now has, everybody says their inflation goal is 2%.
Right.
Who the bleep said that? It just got said often enough that it's true?
Well, that is one of the problems.
Okay,
right?
But it's like what you just mentioned. The PCE is their favorite stuff. Is it really, or does somebody say it? We just keep saying it. I mean,
well, yeah, and that's. I mean, from my perspective, that's a serious issue.
Yeah. Okay, so the idea is your price level, and I'm not going to go through this all the way, is determined by how much money is in. It's a relationship of your currency, dollars, to all the other stuff.
Right. Right.
And if tomorrow everybody walked in with their $1 bill, which is who? Was that a Washington? And walked out with a, who's the guy in the $2 bill? Jefferson? And walked out with a Jefferson. Everybody, I think, would say, well, guess what? If I owed you $20, I now owe you $40.
Right.
Anyway, I mean, it would make massive sense to people. But if you do it a little bit at a time, nobody seems to think that it's any different. So now you come out with this, we need 2% inflation. Okay, well, you don't really. Because if you have zero productivity, you probably want a little bit of positive inflation in a perfect world, and you want people's, if your inflation is going to be 2%, you want people's income to be going up 2.5 or 3. That was the phenomenon during the late 40s, 50s, 60s in this country, maybe to the mid 70s, which essentially defined the middle class, and defined, you know, probably a 30-year slice of economic growth that we'll never see again anywhere, and maybe never saw before.
Right.
And but it wasn't just the 2%; it was the 2.5-3%. People were making real income more every year, so everybody was gaining on the system. And now, but when you put money in sneakily like they do, you screw everybody, because you remove people up in tax brackets, which nobody ever mentions, right?
Right.
I mean, you also, where the money goes by having money in a system and buying, some people can borrow money at less than inflation rate or close to it, to where you have a huge dichotomy between fixed goods and non-fixed goods. I mean, Carl, I used to be able to do this. I could say that if you were to take a 50-year time frame in New York, which is, you know, when I say New York, in Chicago it happened here a little bit, but nothing like New York, people rented for 50 years.
Oh, yeah.
And because the person with the building is making a 6% return, okay, so the person with extra cash might become an investor in Carl's place and make 10%. So it was better for him to do that than buy the building. But the guy with the building wasn't doubling every year to where the rent was doubling, right? At the end of 50 years, a person who rented shouldn't be in the outhouse versus the other guy, a king of the world. That's because of inflation. You look at what's happened in the stock market here. Stock market returns are way more than anybody could have ever done by building a I'm not talking about, starting Microsoft. Anybody's returns better than being a plumber or being anything else, because the money is the money has been pumped up, is pumping
the
stuff up.
But the problem is that this is this is the basic phenomenon of leverage, right? In that when you allow that kind of thing to go on through deficit spending, then leverage ends up, you know, going that direction.
Well, that might be the cause of it, but they're not. I mean, you and I have this joust all the same. They're not the same. I mean, the Fed could, if they had any stones, which I don't know who would have stones enough to do this.
I was going to, yeah.
Should say.
There's a little bit of a problem there, right?
Yeah, I mean, could say, guys, deficits spend all you want. I mean, you and I know, and I think the listeners know, there's only, if you're going to spend $100 million this year and you're going to take in 90.
Right.
There's three things you can do. One, well, if you're the federal government, if you're a city or state, you got two things. You can tax it, right? You can raise the taxes by $10 billion, which nobody wants. You can borrow it. If you do that enough, your interest rates go up, which screws you there. Or guess what? You can print it,
yep.
Right? And if the Federal Reserve guy, if he really was independent, he could say, knock yourself out, guys. I'm not helping you at all.
Yeah.
But he doesn't.
Yeah.
But it's unfair, I think, to take the leap that it couldn't happen that way. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right. Well, this is, you know, this is one of the things that I have, that I've always, you know, had serious issues with regards to, you know, all of what goes on within the political sphere, in that there really isn't any kind of accountability for any of these things within any of this, you know, within any of our current paradigm politically. Okay, it just doesn't exist. And that's an extremely serious problem, I think.
Right? Well, sure it is. It goes right back to, by the way, I just went through the money supply calculation for the last month, 5.1 on a yearly rate. The last month was 7, so we're probably pushing a 6% growth, and I'm going to say our real growth is 1% maybe. So if anybody thinks we don't have 4% inflation, I think better go get a hemorrhoid or something, or get rid
well,
of
it. Well, yeah, and you know, there's a really serious problem that comes with this that is very difficult to solve, which is that all of the people within the government and outside the government, all right, that you know, have their heads up the butts of somebody in the government, which is like all of them, right? these people are going to do everything in their power to prevent any of that ever being addressed.
Well, because it's become the wealth bubble that they're piling into.
Well, yeah, but I mean, but it's like, you know, I mean, you hear, for example, some of the screaming that I saw over the last few days is yelling about a bunch of other things. In this area, home prices, you know, there was a report out a couple days ago. Home prices down like, you know, 4%.
Oh, bull.
You know, in one area. In one specific area.
Well, Florida,
area, right?
Georgia, Texas.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so, and oh my God, it's the end of the world. And I'm like,
well, it is if you're the guy who bought the top.
Well, yeah, well duh.
Yeah.
All right. Guess what? By the way, over here now, I'm starting to see these cabins. And I warned everybody of this during the crazy. I said, if you guys buy it, you know, we're open. All right. Everybody around us is closed. Or, you know, you have to show a Vax card to go in and get a beer from the bar. And then you have to drink it outside. Right. So, I mean, for all intents and purposes, you're closed.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And oh, by the way, there's this basic fundamental law of economics called supply and demand. All right? It is the first law of economics. There are people who would like to vacation. You can't go here because they're shut down. You can come here because we're not. There are only so many places where you can sleep. Guess what that does to price? Duh. Right? Now, I will say this though:
if you took Milton Friedman's course on the theory of price, and you went through the gazillion calculus graphs he did on every page, it's not simple.
Well, exactly. But the thing is that, you know, what
I hated that class. He didn't even like teaching it. He hated it too.
Yeah. Well, what I pointed out to all these people is that if you believe that this is going to continue. That there will never be, at no time in the future, is this fever going to break, so to speak, within the public mind, right? And therefore, these places will never reopen, Yeah, okay. In that case, you know, every single business in those places is gone, right?
But a lot of them didn't. A lot of them didn't.
Well, a lot of them died, yeah. Right? But, you know, that they'll never reopen, then, you know, okay, fine. If you are a more sane individual, then you realize that at some point this will end, this crazy will end, because all pandemics always do. And by the way, some people will have been killed by it, but everybody else.
Well, you took the absolute heart out of downtown Chicago. Because during the same time, your exchange is pretty much all closed. Although they would say they still have floors, so you're talking 10,000 people in addition to the people who are working from home. So you're on any given day, there's probably 20,000 less people within 1,000 yards of our office.
Oh yeah,
there's maybe two places left open, restaurants.
Right. And you know what? You eviscerated huge areas of things, right? But the point I was making to these people is, look, if you're paying based on the idea that you are forever going to get $5,000 a week for this place, and with an 80% fill rate across 12 months, you're out of your effing mind.
Well,
because the real numbers from 2019 before this started was you got, you know, $2,200 a week. And by the way, the fill rate was 70%. Now, if you run the math on that and you come up with a reasonable cap, and oh, by the way, in the period of time from the crash, the housing crash, up until roughly then, you had rate suppression. So therefore, you also had you were taking cap rates that nobody in their right mind would have accepted in a normal rate environment to begin with. All right, but the reason you were willing to take it was that it was better than the alternative places you could put the money.
Oh, without a doubt.
And so, you had people that were taking insanely low cap rates based on the premise that that appreciation is going to make up for it. All right, well, guess what? Now you have people that bought those things with loans, and the revenue has collapsed and the fill rate has collapsed, and now I'm starting to see the foreclosures show up. Now, if you 1031'd out of California, you don't have any more paper on it than you did, you know, in California. But if you didn't, if you actually came in here and tried to set this up as an operating business, oh my God! All right, I mean, you're bankrupt. There is no way you're getting out from under that one.
This is kind of what you bring up is an awful lot of, we always do. That's why it's so hard to even provide direction here, because every time one of you guys talks, you bring up questions that would take like 4 hours to answer. I mean, we all do that, and it really is. It's pretty scary, and that's when you talk about the compensation, and when people are elected as representatives, okay, they got the 2-year time horizon. Okay, you would never. There's a reason for that. It's the people's house. Blah, blah, blah. You want those guys to stay close to their constituencies. There are all these reasons for it. But you would never give an executive a 2-year contract, probably, to do kind of whatever he wanted, and with a bonus based on how he did in the 2 years, because that's a little weird. Now, the Senate, 6 years, you could make the case that even though people are all over term limits and so forth, that having some people, like the Ananui and those kinds of guys, the World War II guys, even Bob Dole, people that had that moral fiber from both sides of the aisle, having them there for 25 years might have been a plus and not a minus.
Right.
Because they actually gave a crap about something they did today, because if anybody's going to bitch about it 6 years from now, they might be the guy they bitched at, right? So you could actually make a case that on some level, not everybody, but for the right people, that might be a good thing. So, I mean, whenever you have one of these kind of arguments, and people have, you know, their views one way or the other, but the idea now, I mean, we've reached the point where the Fed's job, and, you know, and this, maybe that's why the guy looks so skinny, the Fed's job is to preserve the bubble. Because Trump's we're talking about a guy, I mean, he just canceled Kamala Harris's Secret Service protection. When are we going to certify this guy as a madman?
Well, I just saw that. It popped up on my my wire feed. I'm like, the The thing, you know, one of the things that I think is interesting is that the stuff that went on during Biden's time in office was certifiably nuts. Trump does it in places where it's much more visible to the average child.
Well, you guys, there's a bunch, a lot of conservative leaners on the show. The man has made 690 trades in the bond market since he's been in office. Biden should have resigned a year before. I'm with you on that stuff. I mean, I get that. And I don't know who to help prop them up or whatever. Maybe the same people that propped Reagan up his last year. I don't know. But it's not... Or Woodrow Wilson was worse.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, and but the point being is this is the first time the man is doing family business out of the White House. And the guy...
Now, come on.
To that extent.
Okay, I'm saying the Hunter stuff and everything else.
Hunter Biden didn't make a nickel for every dollar this guy made. We're not even close.
And now we're back to the same argument that I've had before, and I reject it out of hand, and it's this. If I go figure out how to, when computers first come in, to bank, you know, bank balances, right?
I get it.
And instead of a passbook, and I figure out how to shave a quarter of a penny off your interest and steal it. And I do it because I figure nobody's going to figure out that they got rooked.
But, you know, here's the difference.
I make $1 billion, and by the way, I never get caught. I do get caught. And the point is, my problem with all of this, and it goes straight back to Congress and the fact that we just refuse to demand that they enforce these laws without fear or favor against everybody.
How can they enforce them when they're doing the same thing?
Well, exactly. And you know what? Here we are with an economy that has been essentially shipped off to China and India, all right, with our manufacturing and everything else. Why? Because I can screw people over there with impunity. I can poison their water.
Well,
I can destroy the land.
Well, that's what the corporations, and they get no...
Well, I understand that, but
what
you
I'm
know
saying,
what?
Here's the difference between my... Even though I'm accused of not being in the middle, I don't like what Hunter Biden did. But this is on a new level. This is being run like a mafia don. I mean,
well, I've
never seen anybody throw tariffs on a metal, have a 100% move in the metal, and a week later take them away, and it go right back down again. Maybe I'm the only one. Maybe you that knows how much that information is worth. I never saw Biden do that. Now, did Hunter Biden chase money to Ukraine and steal some of our dough? Yeah, I didn't.
Well, wait a minute. He also chased.
But my point is, Kyle, I don't care. I don't.
Okay, listen.
You know, he was wrong. Now this guy gets to be just as wrong. I mean, that's I don't like either one of them.
All right. When's it stop? When do we, as the American public,
well, it's got to stop from either through Congress. This guy could shoot somebody tomorrow. And if Congress went to impeach him, they'd say, "Oh, you've picked on him too much."
And you know what? The previous guy, literally shot 60-some% of the American public in the arm, and some percentage of them died.
But he's gone.
I understand that, but if it's wrong in one place, it's wrong in the other.
Didn't I just say that?
Right.
I'm worried about what this guy's going to do tomorrow. That's my worry.
All right, well, you know what? I'm worried about what this guy's going to do tomorrow, but I'm also worried about if you say, well, we stopped this guy, but the next guy that comes in, if he's on the right side of the aisle, he can do it again.
I'm not on that.
No, I'm saying the statute.
But how do we
not run?
We're careening down this path to a totally new, and Kevin calls it a new reset. We're careening down this path to become a fascist economic system.
It's already there.
Okay. Now, it's not... I think we're better off with 5 railroads than 2. I don't think 5 is the number. It should have been 10, but it's not. So now...
Well, you know what? There's another... All right, so...
Okay, what I'm saying is, if we decide the grand Trump experiment is a horse bleep experiment and it doesn't work, how the hell are we going to break those people up? We're not. It was a 10-year deal to break up AT&T, right? How do we decide we need a few more airlines? How do we decide, boy, one railroad isn't the right number? How do we even go about resetting it?
You know, you want a point of agreement that you'll get from me on the crazy shit that's going on right now with regards to Trump and his administration. Apparently, the Surface Transportation Regulator has been fired.
Yeah, because he's the only guy who voted no on the Canadian National, Kansas City.
Merger. Yeah. Right, the merger. And the rail merger. All right, well, you know what? I'm sitting, I have people that are like, well, why did you turn around and go to a subscription-based system for most of your content? And the answer is because Google and Meta and X, even though Musk claims otherwise, he's lying, along with everybody else, Microsoft and all the other guys in this space, have managed to, in concert with the government during Biden's time in office, put together a coordinated censorship system where if I observe, and this just happened, so this is not just a Biden thing, this is still going on, even though people
Trump will make it better. They want to be the censors.
You know what? They didn't make it better. I wrote an article where I observed...
No, I'm saying Trump wants to make it even more.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
I observed that when Clinton did the exact same thing with welfare reform that the big bag of barf bill did, okay? In fact, his changes were actually more severe in that there was a 2-year hard cap on public assistance. All right, that was all you could get at one time.
Major... Let's kick this one on Tuesday.
All right, here's the point. I observed this, and that everybody screamed that this was going to kill people and da 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 da. Well, Politico, which is a fairly hard left leaning news source, all right, but they're entitled to their opinion. They observed several years later that despite all the yelling, that not only did the welfare utilization go down, duh, you threw some people off, but it that would be an expected outcome. But that, in fact, the poverty rate went down. Now, if, in fact, you screwed people, the poverty rate would go up. But the poverty rate did go up.
Poverty rate is, what's the definition of poverty rate? I used to know. It's always going to be there.
Well,
it's bottom 10% or something?
Well, it's the income below the federal poverty rate.
Yeah.
Okay. But the point is that, in fact... If you looked at the labor utilization numbers and the workforce utilization numbers, and you looked at what happened after Clinton did this, and I have those tables, duh, we talk about them every month, right? When the labor report comes out, they increased.
Let's kick this around on Tuesday, because by the way, I'm right with you on this, but I'm going to say.
By the way, I got banned. That article was forced off the advertising supported side as dangerous and derogatory.
Well, we're not going to do that. We like it.
Oh, but Google said you can't have advertising against that. It's dangerous.
No, but nobody assesses the situation.
And incidentally, Trump is in office, okay? So people think I want to, lick that guy's, back door. You're wrong.
Well, let's just kick this up on two. I think there's actually no one when Clinton did that, and he actually dropped the size of government way more than this guy's doing way better. But the people that weren't working back then, to me, at least in the Chicago area, are so much different than the people now.
Oh, anybody that has
the 25 years or how long it's been of drugs and stuff that have been pouring into these cities.
Oh, I know.
There's no way half these people go to work tomorrow morning, even if they want to.
Most of those folks that I saw down in Lower Wacker when I was running MCS.
It's worse now.
I saw them every day. They were mostly drunks.
Yeah.
Drunks
were easy.
I'm just saying, today, they're mostly jacked up on something else.
Yeah, and I don't think my buddy Dr. Blade, we have to get him back on the show. He thinks, first of all, boy, it's a bad term, you'd have to round everybody up. His point was nobody even knows what you're dealing with. You'd have to round everybody up. I'm not saying it's legal. Give everybody a physical, find out where they are, because you might find 10 people out of 100 that actually could do something tomorrow for 4 hours and work their way up to 8. Because you're going to find people that they're so messed up on something like oxycodone or something like that that they're never going to be worth anything. They need to be in an asylum. Ooh, that's a bad term. And there's going to be some in the middle that need to maybe need to help out in a school or do something. You're huge investments away.
You'd have to detox. Yeah. The problem is those people would have to detox, and a lot of them will refuse.
But physically, Carl, the thing I can't describe and don't really want to, you walk down the street, physically, you see people that are, you look at them and they got to be 35 years old. Carl, they're 5'3", they're 105 pounds.
Chief, you know, we see it all. It's
not like the 90s.
No, Chief, it's here too.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I go into Knoxville to have fun sometimes, and down there's a population of that sort, and it's real.
Anyway, on that happy note, who do you like tomorrow? Ohio State, Texas.
Oh God, I hate them both. Can they both lose? That can't happen, can it?
God. The Irish in Miami. I don't think it's Catholics versus convicts anymore. It's Sunday night.
Well, we're playing. The Tennessee craze is starting. The Vols craze is of course going to kick off. And there's a bunch of screaming because pricing has shot the moon again. And
oh yeah.
What else is new? Hey, guess what? When you start paying people to be players, that's a professional.
Well, I mean, Tuesday, let's just pencil this down to what's the difference between their view of the world and the young people I talk to that don't see things 10 times bigger 10 years from now, and they obviously do, and they're paying as much for these players and for these teams. Their view of the world is different, boy.
You know what? It's the same thing that I've told people before when it comes to things like Disney. As you can raise price until people say we're not paying it.
Yeah.
And when they do, all this will change. But if you can get people to pay $500 a ticket,
you're
going to charge $500 a ticket.
Your whole problem, Carl, is you don't realize that gambling on these games is going to save the world. In 2 years from now, your taxes will be zero.
Uh-huh. Sure it will.
On that note, have a nice weekend, bud. SP Futures down 15, NASDAQ Futures down 104. Back on Tuesday, Stocks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
That's all, folks.